Nerd alert.
Dork face.
I am not a loser. I just have a bad haircut.
Kind of a major dork.
Oh, nerds.
If you're into science, tech, or unique hobbies, you're listening to the right show. On Get Nerdy With It, we interview nerds talking about their passions. This is Get Nerdy With It.
Hi, welcome to Get Nerdy With It. I'm your host, Jennifer Ruggiero, and today is July 18th. We're doing episode number 9. And with me today, we have my co-host, guest co-host, as always, Jeff Tickle. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's your week been?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I've been playing far too much Tapped Out.
Tapped Out. That's, yeah, I should know what that is.
The Simpsons game.
Oh, okay. Are you playing that on your phone or?
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks you in.
Oh my gosh. Well, I have not gotten into that. I was just, speaking of Tapped Out, I was doing some kickboxing in my garage right after work today at 5:15, and it's like 85, 90 degrees. And I'll tell you, that's like the best time to do it. I felt so great because it was just that heat in the garage. It was, I don't know. I'm going to do it every day now after work rather than first thing in the morning.
It feels good to get out there and sweat.
Yeah, it does. It does. And when you do it in that heat, you're a lot more stretched out, I guess, and you can move a lot more. So,
yeah.
Well, I'll step away from that for a moment. Now let's get to our guest. I'm so excited. We have Mr. Craig Shipp with us today. Hello, Craig.
Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm great, and I've listened to a number of your podcasts, and I really liked the podcast you did with the Made in the USA guy.
Oh, that John Alley.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, he was a great guest to have on. We had him right in time for the 4th of July, and, he's actually one of my neighbors, and we meet when we walk our dogs, and he told me one day what he did, and I thought, wow, that's really a cool thing to learn about. And so I thought maybe others would be interested in it as well. So I'm glad to hear you liked it.
Absolutely.
To let him know.
Absolutely. You'll have to have him on again.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. He'll be launching his new site, usawares.com, here in the near future. Right now there's a beta version of it up. But so as soon as he has that fully launched, then I'll have him back on. So tell us about what you do, Craig. I know you most for areaguides.com.
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us some about that? It looks like to me they're local community portals, but if you could go into that a little bit.
Yes. When the internet came around, I first took a look at it, I want to say 93, somewhere around there, and I actually played around with it a little bit, and I thought, well, this is too slow. This doesn't work too good. And I put it on the back burner. And then around 1996 or so, I thought about it some more. And I was in another business I was in the advertising business. I had displays in hotel lobbies where businesses would advertise, like restaurants and so forth. Then we had a telephone where people could call direct to that business. So it was like a little mini guide to services around the hotel that guests could use, a quick dry cleaner, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I thought about it a little bit, and I thought about ways to utilize the internet, and I thought maybe it would be kind of cool to have local portal websites. And so I started registering domain names that matched county names around the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area primarily.
That's smart.
With the idea that, for example, on PrinceGeorge's.com, I would put up a community website to Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. And so I registered a number of those, and then I started building some websites. I also had an automobile appraisal business at the time. I built a website for that. I was an early beta tester for Microsoft Front Page. And so this was about 1996. So I started building some pages, some websites for myself, and I built a couple of websites for some friends, and it was really a pain in the you-know-what to work with that program, because in the early days, what happened was every time you made a change to a website, and then you upload it, it didn't upload just the change. It uploaded everything again.
The entire site.
And wow. So, yeah, we really get spoiled by the way things work now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when they finally made it so that it just uploaded the changes, that I was like, wow, this is great.
Now, was it, let me ask, when it went back to your front page days, when you were doing the beta part, that was when it would reload the entire site. Now, when they launched, was it the entire site still, or did they?
Well, when they rolled out the public beta, I think by then it was just uploading the changes.
Yeah,
but I remember in the early days, I had a hosting service out of Sedona, Arizona. He was one of the few that hosted Microsoft Front Page websites, and he was a great guy. And he was, I don't think that I ever slept, because I could send him an email at 2 a.m. and he would like respond back. And I mean, you had all kinds of problems and all kinds of little things you had to work through. I mean, it was definitely buggy, but it was a powerful program for the day for people that didn't know coding. You know, I didn't know HTML or any of that stuff.
Yeah,
and
that
so
was...
you didn't need to know any of that with this. And it was a pretty powerful program. But even having said that, it was, you know, a lot to work through.
Yeah.
But anyway, fast forward a little bit. So I decided at some point in time to start building a couple of the community websites, which I had registered domain names for already. And I'd also registered other domain names that were not related to community websites, just to speculate on and things like that. And so then I built a couple of websites, and in my spare time, I was running two businesses at the time. In my spare time, I'd go out and I'd canvass local businesses and try to sell them on the concept of sponsoring these local websites. And
how did you even have spare time when you were running two businesses?
Well, like for example, when I canvassed in Annapolis, I would go there on a beautiful day that it would be nice to be in Annapolis anyway. And I started right at State Circle, right around the state capitol there. And I just canvassed all the neat little businesses. And it was, I mean, I was getting checks right away. Businesses were signing up. And a lot of the businesses then didn't have any web presence at all.
Ah.
So they were very receptive to having some pictures. I had a digital camera hanging around my neck. I'd take some pictures of their business. I'd show them the pictures on the camera. And most of them had never seen a digital camera. And so they were receptive to having something up on the web about their business. And so I started getting checks pretty much right away. So then, of course, I'd go back as often as I could because I was getting money.
Mm-hmm.
So it slowly but surely the tail started wagging the dog, and I started getting more money doing that than what I had previously been doing.
Hmm.
So I sold the automobile appraisal business to a friend of mine who took that over. And then in 1999, I actually moved out to Frederick County. I was in Bethesda, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
I moved out to Frederick County to full-time work on the Frederick website, which at the time was frederickcounty.com.
Okay.
After a couple of years, we bought the domain frederick.com, and now that's the one I use for that particular website. So I moved out. I bought a place out in Urbana, Maryland, which was kind of out in the sticks at the time. I bought a place with some acreage. And I started working that site. And in the first year, I signed up 250 local sponsors to sponsor the site. And the reason I use the term sponsor is they pay an annual fee, a fixed annual fee, to what we call sponsor the site, which is kind of unique in internet advertising. They're not paying per click. They're not paying for banners to be up for like a month and then the banner's down. They're paying a fixed annual fee for the presence that they get in the site. The fee varies depending on the level of exposure they get in the site,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a fixed annual fee. And so that's what we've been doing ever since. And most of the sponsors that we have, most of those 250 sponsors that were the initial sponsors in the first year are still with us, you know, 12, 13 years later.
No kidding. Well, I guess it's proven effective.
You're yes.
definitely a pioneer in that area, because to do this right when, you know, the internet was first getting launched and, like you said, the businesses didn't have a presence online, and to have an online portal where people can go and see what is happening in this community and what's happening in the neighborhood, so that way, you know, if you're traveling there and that's such a good idea. Now, I got to ask, though, for Frederick.com, when you were Frederick County, does the county have that domain, or did you keep that Frederick County domain?
Frederick County, you know Dan McDermott.
Yeah.
And I've kept the domain. They were both going to the same website, whether you went to frederickcounty.com or frederick.com. And Dan and I started talking, geez, it's been probably almost 2 years ago now. He's been trying to figure out a way to monetize the web. He's in the newspaper business, right? And all the newspaper businesses, they're trying to figure out how to transition to the web and make money at it, and none of them have been able to do that. There may be a few exceptions. But he was casting about trying to figure out a way to do that, and we got into discussions, and make a long story short, we have launched two sites for him, and one, we decided to use the frederickcounty.com URL because it's Frederick County, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that URL anyway, so we're using frederickcounty.com now for that Virginia website, which he runs, and the other one is warrencountyva.com, which isn't one of our strongest URLs, but it works. So he has warrencountyva.com for the Warren County site. So he has two newspapers down there, one's for Frederick County and one's for Warren County, and so now he has a website for each of those, and he's going to try to get things going down there.
Wow. So, go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Craig, you're making me think of like a time traveler. You take technology from the future and get started with it in the past, and then now you're taking technology from the past and bringing them forward. That's pretty cool.
Well, and it really what it is, it's all about connecting businesses to customers.
Sure.
At the end of the day, that's what it is. It's these media companies, if you will, they insert themselves as the middleman or a traffic cop or whatever you want to call them, and they're taking customers and directing them to a business. And that's what we need to know how to do. That's what businesses want, and that's what businesses are willing to pay for. And Google, of course, has been extremely successful with the search engine, where somebody searches, and then they can put an ad up that's relevant to that search, and so there's a high likelihood that somebody's going to click on that ad and do business with that company. That's what the company wants. And what I was thinking was, why not have a site that's extremely relevant to a specific geographic area, because most local businesses, they're interested in customers that are close enough to come by and put money in their cash register. They're not interested in a customer that's, you know, 300 miles away that they will never see.
So I thought,
why not have a local portal website that's totally focused on that area? And also, businesses are barraged by people trying to sell them something, some sort of advertising, some sort of something, right? And so why not have a name for that website that makes them feel somewhat comfortable? So when the sales rep comes in, they stand apart from all the other carpetbaggers that are coming in there trying to sell something. So if I can walk in the door and I'm in Loudoun County, Virginia, for example, and I can say I'm with loudouncounty.com, then I'm going to have a little bit more of an edge over the guy that comes in there and says he's with Patch or AOL or even Google, for that matter. Some of these other big guys are just, it's too detached, and the people don't embrace them as much. At least that's been my experience. And so if you can come up with a website that they think is really theirs and part of their community and that they can be part of, and we do make them part of it because we guarantee their annual rate will not increase. We guarantee the spot that they have in the business directory. They're first come, first listed. So if they're the first realtor, for example, that signs up, they own that number one spot under realtors in the business directory. If their competitor signs up later, they appear beneath them. And so they have a vested interest in staying in the site and paying that annual fee and not losing that spot. And then we guarantee that that annual fee will not increase. So they know that if they help us promote the site, which is another big element of what we do, we have what we call promotional partners, which are businesses that, for example, snipe the end of their radio spot with "see us at frederick.com," things like that, or put a big sign up at their business saying "see us at frederick.com." Mm-hmm. We reward them with no price increase in their sponsorship rate. And we sometimes will even give them additional visibility in the site, like an additional banner ad or something like that, if they're doing a lot of promotion. And so we all work together to promote the site, and they know we're not going to jack up their rates later because the site gets a lot busier. So they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot by helping promote the site. So they're very willing to do that. And so it really becomes a partnership between us and the sponsors.
So it really is about keeping it local, local businesses. That's wonderful.
Yes. And then the other element in all of this was, okay, I ran the numbers and I came to the conclusion that one local site can only make so much money. There are only so many businesses in the footprint that are going to be willing to pay you an annual fee. And so you're only going to be able to make so much money. And it's not like it's all about making a ton of money, but that's important. And I always wanted something that was scalable. So then we thought of, okay, let's build a network of these sites. Let's call it areaguides.com, and let's have a network of these sites, and that is scalable. And so that's where we're headed with all of this. And we're still in very early days, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of what we can do with all of this, which is kind of exciting. It's also kind of frustrating that we haven't made progress faster. But we're slowly but surely whittling away at things and moving in the right direction.
Well, how many sites do you have already that are tied into this? How many portals, rather?
I think there's about 30 if you go to areaguides.com and look at all the sites. Mm-hmm. Some are more successful than others. By far, the frederick.com site is the most successful because it's been worked. Mm-hmm. We've had boots in the street, myself, and now I have a full-time rep, Kenny Downs, who works the site very effectively. And we've tried every method of doing this without boots in the street, online sign up, so on and so forth, and not very successful with any of those. It really requires boots in the street and people that are relatively sharp and know what they're doing and that can go out and talk to businesses and that are willing to do that, which there are very few people, even as high as unemployment is in this country. There are very few people, I'm sorry to say, that are willing to just go out and do a little bit of work.
Yeah, it is challenging to find an effective salesperson, an effective outside salesperson, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Well, really, and it's not just limited to outside salespeople. I have businesses all the time that are telling me that they're having trouble finding people in all kinds of various jobs that require, some relatively hard work. It's a shame, but that seems to be the trend. But we're working on it, and we have some ideas for some ways to improve and streamline online signups and other things. And there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah, that's true. And I know you'll find a way to continue to grow it. You have a very smart business mind, so I'm confident you'll be able to do that. Something I've noticed is that you have a lot of community events, or I see you post a lot of pictures. Like, for example, there was a Civil War event that you just had that you had video footage, and I believe you did have video and,
yes,
and photos from that. Now, do those go on your – how do those tie in, basically? How do those tie into your areaguides.com?
Okay, couple of things. The covering the events, first of all, I enjoy doing it, so that helps. I enjoy photography. I enjoy meeting people out at events. I found, it's been quite a few years ago. It was probably one of the first in the street parades that I went to in downtown Frederick 10 plus years ago, where I went to a parade and I had a convertible at the time, and a politician wanted to ride in the car, and I had the car all lettered up with Frederick.com down the side of it. It was a Mazda Miata convertible, and it had big letters, Frederick.com all down the side. Mm-hmm. And so I said, sure, you can ride in the car, and, because a huge amount of publicity,
a lot of
people watching the parade. And so I drove, and they rode in the parade, and we took a few photos, and then I started thinking, I said, well, this is a lot of visibility that you can get doing this. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that. I started letting people use the convertible in the parade. And then I think it was around 2003 or so or something like that I bought my first Segway. And I thought, it would be kind of cool to put a sign on the front of the Segway and take it to a parade and have it in the parade and also simultaneously shoot some videos and some photos of the parade. And so I started doing that, and it was very well received by people. People loved to ride the Segway, for example, after the parade, or you know, even sometimes during it. And then I started going to other events, not just parades, any kind of a big event, like the big 4th of July celebration in Baker Park there at Frederick. I would go to that and bring the Segway and let people ride it and take photos and video clips of them on it and put it up on the website. And I would always take and put the content up in the form of an article on, for example, if I was in Frederick, on frederick.com, and I'd give people my cards and all and say, you can go there and you can get your photos. Mm-hmm. And then what I would do is I would embed a photo slideshow. I was using Picasa at the time. I still use it. I use Flickr as well now. And I would embed the slideshow right in the article. I would embed the video right in there. I would put a link to where they could download the photos on Flickr. Now I also include a link to where they can get them on Facebook, so they all can friend me on Facebook and all. And I cross-link all of this. And so what happens is you get a huge amount of promotion out of doing this and a lot of goodwill. Does it result in a lot of new sponsors? Not directly, but it certainly helps. It certainly drives traffic to the site, which gives the sponsors a better chance of landing new customers and new clientele, raises awareness that the site even exists. Back in the day when we first started, the only people that knew about Frederick.com were the people that I told about it. Now I just bump into people, and if I bump into somebody in Frederick County and they haven't heard of Frederick.com, it's shocking. I mean, just about everybody in the footprint knows about it. We have about 65,000 regular users of the site every month. There's only 240,000 people in the entire county. So, you know, just about everybody knows about the site at this point. And that's probably 50% of the reason is probably the 60,000 or so photos that I've taken at events over the last 10 years.
Do you ever hear from county officials? Are they happy that you're doing the site? And
I've reached out to them quite a bit to get them to be more involved in the site. And Robin Santangelo is the director of communications for Frederick County. She does come on our Frederick Week show from time to time. They have been very reluctant to embrace technology, period, as have all government agencies, which is kind of a shame. We've also had other incumbents in the town. I was kind of naive when I came up to Frederick and I launched the site. I thought, well, you know, here's an open community website that anybody can publish articles on. Anybody can add their events to the calendar. Let's say a church is having a fundraiser or whatever. They can post their event on there. I figured everybody would welcome this with open arms and would be so happy to have something like this for the community. But then I rapidly started learning that there were some incumbents that felt really threatened by this. And I'm not going to name the organizations, but I will name the local newspaper, Frederick News Post, right from the beginning. They felt very threatened. And even though I went to them and tried to get them to partner with us, and I was going to share revenue with them and everything else, but basically at the time they told me that the internet, you know, they didn't believe in the internet and blah, blah, blah. And then years later, when the internet started taking off, they've pretty much done everything they could to try to, you know, run us out of town. Of course, they've been totally unsuccessful. But yeah, it has not really been embraced except for from the small business owners, which is really the ones that count at the end of the day. They've really embraced it. But some of the public organizations like the Chamber of Commerce, the Tourism Council, people like this have been very lukewarm as far as embracing the concept, because they all have their little fiefdoms. They have their little website that they think that everybody should just go there, that, you know, their website should be the portal. And I've tried to explain to them, you can't have a community with eight portal websites, most of which are closed down, that, like, for example, if you're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, you can be listed in there, but that's it. Nobody else can participate in the site. So it's kind of a closed down thing, whereas ours is totally open to everybody. But more and more people in the community are starting to get the concept of an open portal website where everybody can share it. And so we'll see. again, it's things like this that you just learn with experience over time that, you know, you thought things were going to go a certain way, and then you just have to adjust as you go along and do the best you can with the hand that you're dealt.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's say if another county comes across areaguides.com and is interested in having, I guess it all depends on the website, whether or not there's a domain that they have, but they are interested maybe in adding to this. Have you encountered that at all?
We've had a couple of people approach us about doing websites. Dan McDermott is one who we have done two websites with. There's a gentleman in Florida that we did a website with. There's a gentleman in North Carolina that we did a website with. They haven't been that successful yet to date. Again, it takes the right kind of person to want to go out and canvas local businesses and take a lot of no's before they get a yes. Mm-hmm. Many of the businesses that I signed up, the sponsors that I signed up in the first year, gave me 5 no's before they gave me a yes. Hmm. I mean, that was not uncommon at all for me to get many, many no's before they finally would say, oh, okay, I'll do it. And I didn't care how many times they said no. That was okay with me. Mm-hmm. But I guess a lot of people don't look at it that way. So, you know, it's something that it is scalable. Like if, for example, a realtor registered a domain name years ago and had a thought of using it for something for a community, but they haven't really done anything with it, or they don't have the technology to do it or whatever, we could certainly talk to them and we can provide the technology and we could make them part of the network very easily. But it is important to have a good, strong domain, because I've seen a lot of what I call no-name websites, websites that have lousy domains, come and go. We probably had a dozen wannabe competitors to Frederick.com in Frederick County that have just fizzled. And we have in about 2002, maybe 2003, the Frederick News Post launched a competing website called Digital Frederick, mm-hmm. that they poured a ton of money into. And they ran big full-page ads in their newspaper every day. I mean, they just ran a ton of radio ads directly taking on Frederick.com. And they did it for almost 2 years, and they finally just shut it down. Because they just couldn't compete. Wow. And we had almost no budget. I mean, but what was unique about the whole situation was a lot of the money that they were spending, they were actually spending real money. I mean, putting a full-page ad in their newspaper is not necessarily real money to them, although they still have to print that page, right? Mm-hmm. But they still, the radio ads, they give up space in a trade situation for those. So that really indirectly cost them money. And then a lot of the other things they were doing with signage and other things cost them real money. Most of our promotion was coming via our promotional partners that were promoting the site that cost us no money.
Nice.
And so we were getting a huge amount of promotion. I mean, we literally had signs all over town. We were in, like, you couldn't listen to the local radio station for more than 10 minutes without hearing somebody with a radio spot sniped, see us at Frederick.com.
How smart.
And so they just couldn't combat that because they waited too long. We already had 250, 300 sponsors, many of which were active promotional partners when they launched their site.
Yeah.
And so they just couldn't compete, and their name wasn't that great. When people heard digitalfrederick.com, mm-hmm. a lot of people thought digital was a descriptor to frederick.com, and they would just go to frederick.com.
Yeah.
We had another organization that was using the name celebratefrederick.com,
mm-hmm.
and same thing. They even had t-shirts made up that had celebrate in cursive over the top of frederick.com. And when I saw the shirts, I just laughed. I'm like, What are you people thinking? They're going to see the cursive Celebrate and they see Frederick.com in big bold letters. What they're going to see is Frederick.com.
Yeah. So that's free promotion for you. That's good.
And all their letterheads and all their signage and everything was done that way.
I think
they still to this day do it that way. So we love it.
That's funny.
What can I tell you?
So I'm hearing a little bit of feedback on myself. I hope that you guys can't hear that. You have your hands in something else. I know that you are involved with the Hangout 10 Network.
Before we go to that, one thing you said you did want to talk about, I don't know if you still do, is the gear that I use for shooting
events.
Want to do that real quick?
Then why don't you tell us about that? What kind of camera are you using when you are shooting your events?
Okay, so lately, since about 2007 or so, I'm using a Nikon D700 for stills. Mm-hmm. And I usually put my 24-70 lens on there or the 70-200. And I usually pick before I go to the event which lens. I used to carry both and I'd switch them from time to time, but now I'm lazy. So I decide, okay, am I going to be close to the action? I'll use the 24-70. Is it going to be a Civil War event or something like that where I might need a little more reach? I'll just put the 70-200, either of which are great for portraits. I like to take a lot of portraits of people. Mm-hmm. So either of those lenses works great for that. And then for the video clips, I carry two Sony NEX cameras. I carry the VG10 and I carry the NEX7. And so depending on what I'm shooting, most of the footage I'll be shooting with the VG10, which has an 18-200 kit lens on it. And then I'll use the NEX7 with a Zeiss 24mm f1.8 lens on it for like interviews and for low light situations and two camera shoots if I want to set up two cameras. And then if I want to do a three camera shoot, I have an NEX5 that I can also bring.
Wow.
So we can set up a three camera shoot. So
how did you learn all about this? Did you just teach yourself on...
Yeah, just slowly but surely, just doing it. I had a back in the early 2000s, around 2002 or something like that, I had an Olympus camera, which was a 4-megapixel pro type camera that, you know, big bulky camera, just like the D700 that I use now. And then I got sucked into the pixel wars of, you know, these high megapixel Canon started coming out with some point and shoot power shots that, you know, say, oh, this one's 12 megapixels and all this. And so I went to actually Canon power shot cameras for a while, and I was shooting stills with that and video with the same camera. Mm-hmm. And then I became convinced that the tiny sensors and those cameras is just not good enough. And so then in 2007, that's when I went back and bought a full frame, you know, D700 Nikon, and went back to the big heavy stuff. I don't really like carrying the big heavy stuff. It's a lot of weight to carry. I have a big think tank belt that I wear that I can, you know, carry all my gear. Mm-hmm. But it just, these small camera solutions just aren't quite there yet. And I actually ranted on Trey Radcliffe a little bit yesterday about that.
Did you?
they're just not there. He did a whole post on how he switched from Nikon to the NEX7, and for some things you can do that, but there's a lot of instances where you still need that big, in my opinion, that big full frame camera with some nice fast glass on it.
Yeah, well, I notice, I mean, Jeff, you might know more about cameras than I do. I don't really know too much about it, so it's all news to me. But when you take your shots, like there was one shot that you, when you were taking of Audrey, what's her last name?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. What is it called? The hula hoopist.
Yeah. Hula hooping. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That those shots that you took were with those in motion, you were able to get a clear shot of her with the hula hoop going, and just that motion you're able to capture so well.
One advantage to the big advantage to what they call fast glass, which means you can shoot at a wider open aperture. So let's take either of those zooms I mentioned. You're shooting at f2.8, And so you can shoot at a faster shutter speed. The wider that aperture is open, the more it's open, the more light's going to come in. So I can shoot at a faster shutter speed even in lower light. And so let's say the sun's going down and we're at the Siesta Beach drum circle and you have that nice soft light coming, you know, just before it gets dark. I can still shoot at maybe a 500th of a second or so and have my ISO somewhere within reason. If I have a nice fast piece of glass on the camera. Same thing with if I have an f1.8, that's even faster, right? So if I'm shooting a video or something and I've got an f1.8 lens on the NEX-7, it's going to help in low light. So that's what we call fast glass. The other thing is in a sporting situation, like I was shooting the motorcycle races and motorcycles are coming like right at me at high speeds. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to shoot that and keep it in focus and get a lot of shots off. Same thing. I can shoot at a faster shutter speed if I choose to. I can shoot at a shallower depth of field. And so, therefore, I can get the motorcycle in focus and maybe the crowd in the background all out of focus. So you can do all of those things if you have fast glass and if you have a camera that can focus rapidly. Mm-hmm. Neither of which are easy to do with a NEX series camera at this point in time. So, and to Trey's credit, he did mention that late in his interview. There was a long interview that he did, but it was almost like an afterthought. And to me, it should have been one of the first things mentioned. I'm not going to tell people that I'm switching from Nikon to NEX-7 and lead people to believe that that's okay in many situations, because in many situations it's not okay. And so it was almost like link bait to me. And so that's why I kind of like spoke out about it a little bit.
Well, did you get some feedback on the post?
A little bit. Yeah. I got some people that agreed with me. And, it's... To me, when you've got a professional that a lot of people look up to and a lot of people follow him, you don't need to sensationalize things. You don't need to make a big deal of the fact that you're moving from Nikon to NEX. I mean, I have both cameras, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can talk about both cameras, and he has both cameras. But the last thing I would tell somebody or imply to somebody is you can make the switch from, you know, a D700 with good pro glass and get rid of all that and just switch to an NEX and everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some real problems depending on what you shoot if you make that switch. And that would be the first thing that I would point out. I would point out there's real benefits. It's a lot lighter weight and all that. Mm-hmm. But I would also point out, hey, there's some things that you're going to have some real problems with. So that's where I would have handled that a little bit different.
Well, it's good that you spoke out and you let everyone know. So that's great. Well, I'm one of those people. I just use my phone. But I don't do anything professionally with my pictures either. So,
Well, Jennifer, so with your phone, okay, if you want to try to isolate a subject, just get close. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the oldest rules in photography, and it still is, it's a great rule of thumb, is get close. Hmm. If you can get very close to your subject, and if the back, whatever's in the background, is relatively far away from your subject, in other words, there's not another person like just a foot behind them, the person's maybe 6 or 8 feet behind them,
right,
then you can still do a little bit of isolation there. It's a lot of photography is not what you include in the photograph, it's what you don't include. So just look at that frame every time you're taking a picture and look at what's in that frame and look at what you really want in that frame, what's your subject, right? And then look at what else is in the frame that you can get rid of. Mm-hmm. And then your photos will just get better and better and better.
Good tips. I'll have to start thinking more when I'm taking a shot. So, yeah. Well, let's shift gears, if we may, because I know you're not only do you do all of this, you're huge with Google Plus Hangouts, and I've been seeing you do Hangouts since Google Plus Hangouts came out. So, you started a website dedicated to this. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. What happened was in the very beginning, when I first learned about Hangouts, I got in a Hangout, and there were some interesting people in the Hangout. And in the early days, everybody you bumped into on Google Plus, in my opinion, they were interesting people, maybe with the exception of myself. but I was bumping into some really interesting people. Mm-hmm. And we were having these interesting discussions. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute now. There's a content creation opportunity here. You know, we shouldn't be having these discussions and then just at the end, everybody leave and that's it. And there's no record of that. There's nothing for people to watch. There's nothing for other people to enjoy. Mm-hmm. There's no work product out of it.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why I cover the events is people spend a lot of time and money, especially like these Civil War events, dressing up and doing all of this stuff. And all they're focused on is having a great event, which is great. I love that. That's really cool. But I'm always thinking, well, shouldn't this be preserved for them to look at 10 years from now or 20 years from now, if for no other reason? Maybe their grandkids might want to see it. I would love to see events that my parents were involved in when they were little kids. I'd love to be able to go back and watch a video, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or watch some photos and so forth, but that doesn't exist. And so when I started doing the Hangouts, same thing. I'm saying to myself, this is a great way to create content. And so I asked some people, I was in a Hangout, and I said, hey, why don't we do like a news spoof show or something? Why don't we have some fun with this, and I'll record it, and we'll create like a little show. And because I had some software that I could record the Hangout locally on my computer. And so we started doing that. We started playing around with that. And I still claim that I'm the first one that did it. Dan tries to claim that he is, but if you go on YouTube, my YouTube video that I put up of a recorded Hangout predates his, and so anyway, we've always had some back and forth on that. But you know Monica M, right? You know, M Monica, you know her?
No, I don't.
But anyway, she agrees that I was the first one, and she's the authority on it. So anyway, we started doing these shows, and then somehow we got the attention of the Googlers, and at first I thought, uh-oh, they're going to tell us they don't want us to do this, that mm-hmm. It's not really designed for this and that you're really not supposed to do this. But it was quite the opposite. They actually embraced what we were doing, and they were very pleased with it. And then they worked on Hangouts on Air, mm-hmm. which we have now, which now, of course, we can stream the Hangout live to your YouTube channel mm-hmm. and have it recorded simultaneously as an archive and as a show for people to watch.
So wait, pause for a second. When mm-hmm. you were doing it initially, when it first launched, were you doing it? We didn't have Hangouts on Air at that time.
It was just a Hangout that I was recording locally, and then I would upload it to YouTube because I had a YouTube account that was approved for more than 20-minute long videos, mm-hmm. and so I could upload an hour, 2-hour long video, no problem. And so I was using ScreenFlow, a program on a Mac, to just record everything that happens on your computer, including the audio. So I was just recording it. Mm-hmm. And then I would upload it, and then we'd have it, we'd have the show. So it worked pretty good. And then fast forward to now, of course, Google has rolled out Hangout on Air, so we no longer have to record it locally. And I don't even record it locally anymore. I used to do it both ways. When they first came out of Hangouts on Air, they were a little bit glitchy, so I was locally recording them as well as doing the Hangout on Air. But now it's so reliable that I don't even record them locally, knock on wood. So that now they've also added various tools that we can do the lower third and it's all kinds of cool tools, the screen share, all things that we started asking for right from the beginning. I mean, we were saying, this is really cool. We need all these other features. And so they've been great about embracing creating content. They haven't done it fast enough for me. I always want stuff faster and I always want it better. And so I've mixed it up with the Googlers on all that too. Mm-hmm. But they are moving in the right direction and it's all getting better. And so then I was saying to myself, discovery of these shows is not very easy. Other people started doing shows and there was no real easy way, even though Google's a search company. There was no real easy way to discover Hangouts and Hangouts on Air
right.
and recorded Hangouts or any of this kind of stuff. And so I registered the URL hangout10.com, because at the time, 10 people was the max that could be in a Hangout.
Is that still the max?
It is, but there's like special Hangouts that can have up to, I think, 15 people. Mm-hmm. I think for like the NFL and for like pro accounts, like if you have a apps account, things like that, right. I think they still allow 15 in some of those. And who knows, they might change 10 in the regular one at some point. But I registered hangout10.com. And then it's just a very rudimentary thing right now. It just has some basic information about it's part of my areacable.com website, which is just a Google site. It's just a free Google site that I built many years ago and hasn't been really updated that much. But I just added a page to that, just explaining Hangout 10. And then I have a link to just a very simple grid that shows the shows that are currently part of the network. And the idea is, if you want to do a show, or you have an interest in doing a show, or you have a talent or something you want to showcase and you want to do a show, we help you get started. And mm-hmm. so every Monday night at 10 p.m., we have a Hangout that people can join, that the whole purpose is to help people either come up with a show idea, get the branding for a show idea locked down, get technical tips, you know, whatever they need to get a show on the road, on the air. And so it's just a way to help out, and nobody pays anybody anything. You can be part of the network. We ask you voluntarily, it's on the honor system, that during your show at some point you say that you're part of the hangout10.com network, so that again everybody gets cross promotion. The idea being that there's strength in numbers, right? If there's a bunch of shows that are all cross promoting, then hopefully all the shows will do better.
Yeah.
And so, it's very early stages. We probably got 10, 15 shows or something listed so far. Mm-hmm. One of our shows, though, Forensic Week, he's actually been approached by a national company that wants to sponsor his show.
No kidding.
And his show is very interesting. He's a forensic scientist. He's a professor from the University of Maryland. And his show is very interesting. It's very well done. And he's had a number of other instructors and professors and so forth that are using his shows as part of their curriculum.
Wow.
And he's respected in the community anyway. And a lot of the guests he's had on his show are very respected people. I mean, people that worked on like the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, things like that. He's written books and, you know, he's the real deal. And so it doesn't surprise me that he's one of the first on the network that has been approached, you know, with a sponsorship deal.
That's huge.
So I think it has some potential, and I think that creating content using Hangouts has a lot of potential. I've even asked you to get a show going.
You have. I know. I was thinking about taking the show to Hangouts on air and going video. It's, you know, and with Skype going, you know, Skype is questionable sometimes. I think a few shows ago we had some Skype issues, and so I might have to go do that and bring it over to Hangout 10. Now, so everyone listening, is Hangout 10, that's 10, Hangout 10.
Yeah, and hangouttn.com I think works as well.
Oh, that goes there too?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I usually cover my bases.
Oh, that's smart. Okay. So I believe Jeff was having some mic issues, and I think he's back. Are you still with us, Jeff? I don't know.
There, we got Jeff.
Oh, you got me.
Oh, you're back. Yay.
I am having technical difficulties, but I can't blame this one on Skype.
is it you this time? Is it the mic?
Yeah, so I apparently need some better equipment. Let's say we start the nerdy hangout. What should we have?
You mean what kind of equipment?
In terms of equipment, obviously webcam and microphone. I was wondering if you have any recommendations.
Well, I'll tell you, on my other workstation, this one I'm using a mixer. I'm using a Behringer mixer, and then I've got a mic, you know, plugged into that. But on my other computer, I use a Yeti microphone, and I love it. It's just a USB Yeti. I don't like to wear a headset, okay? So I don't like things on my head. So I've just got a Yeti microphone. It's like a stand-up desk mic. And it works great. It can be 10 inches or so away, 12 inches away from your mouth, and it picks up great. And they're not cheap, but it's made by Blue, you know, the company Blue. Mm-hmm. And they have other mics as well, some of which are a little less expensive than the Yeti. But for audio, I really like that mic for a one-piece solution. If you're going to go to a mixer and then plug in a mic to it, you know, then you've got all kinds of different options at that mm-hmm. point. But the Yeti is just a kind of a cleaner situation because it just plugs right into the USB. There are other USB mic solutions out there. If you go to my blog, if you go to my website, craigship.com, and then click through to my blog, I've got some write-ups on some different mics and different setups that you can use. But there's a lot of options out there, for
Jeff,
sure.
You'll be
have to check it out.
Yeah, you're going to need to check that out with your mic.
Definitely. Yeah, I think so. I've been happy. I've got an M-Audio Producer USB that just plugs straight in, but it has apparently a bad habit of cutting out.
I wonder if it's the mic or the computer. I don't know.
Yeah, it might not be the mic. I mean, are you on a Windows or a Mac?
I'm on Windows.
Oh, there you go.
Boy. Oh, my goodness. You're a better man than I am, Jeff.
Well, truth be told, I'm a Linux guy, but I'm also a realist.
Yeah. I tell you what, I gave up on Windows. It must be 6 years ago now. I just gave up. I just did. It whooped my butt. I mean, I just couldn't handle it anymore. So, and I never looked back. The first one I bought was a PowerBook G4, I guess they called it.
Yeah.
And I bought it as like a second computer. I still had my main workstation was still Windows, but I'll tell you what, it wasn't 6 months before I got rid of my workstation and set up a Mac workstation to go with the laptop, and I've never looked back.
No kidding.
Well, I'm due for a new computer one of these days, so I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, and the one I'm talking on right now, this is a six-year-old computer. This is my backup workstation. I renew my workstation every 3 years. So mm-hmm. the one I have now is a Mac Pro workstation that's 3 years old. This one is 6 years old. I'm not going to renew my current one until probably next spring because they're coming out with the new Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get that beautiful machine?
Yeah, it's coming out in the fall, so I'm not going to get it in the fall. I'm going to go to Florida. I'm going to come back in the spring, and that's probably when I'm going to upgrade to that one. I'm going to wait until, you know, any bugs are worked out and all
sure.
the reports are in and all that. Because my current system works fine. I mean, it's bulletproof, reliable, and it works fine. So I'm not pressed. But that's my plan. And then my current workstation will replace this one. And I don't know what I'll do with this one because it still works great.
I don't know.
But I mean, people say, well, the Mac machines are more expensive. But in my estimation, you get more life out of them. Mm-hmm. They're a viable computer, I'll put it this way, for a longer period of time. My dad used to buy almost a Windows machine every year, for gosh sakes. And then he finally switched to Mac, and now he's doing the same thing as me. He's keeping them 3 or 4 years, and they're still working great at the end of 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't upgrade my MacBook. It was a 2007 MacBook. I didn't upgrade to the MacBook Pro Retina until last summer, you know, so... it's lasting a good 5 years for me before I.
Yeah, and was it still working? Was it still working good?
It was still working. It was groggy, you know. And then I wiped it and started from scratch, and it's a lot better now. But yeah, it was groggy, but you know, it was still working all right.
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old MacBook Pro. It's got the black keys on it. You know, mm-hmm. It's a 3-year-old, and last year I put an SSD in it. And I maxed out the RAM, and it made it like a whole new machine again.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
It's just lightning fast.
That SSD made a big difference with that SSD, yeah.
It's killer, and I won't replace it now. I'll use it for at least a couple more years, because it works great. And it's got two hard drives in it now. So it's got the SSD, and it's still got the original hard drive in it.
That's great.
Well, maybe I'll have to talk to you afterwards about buying a used Mac.
You know what, Jeff? I'm selling a MacBook Pro that we bought last year. So okay. I'll talk to you offline if you're interested. It's an awesome machine. It's pretty, you know,
It's only a year old?
It's only a year old.
Does it have an SSD in it?
It does not have the SSD.
Man, Jeff, if you bought that one and you put an SSD in it, it would be an absolute screamer.
Well,
what you do is you take out the optical. It's got an optical drive in it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you take that out and you put the SSD in place of that, and then you leave the original hard drive in there. And then you just take the spinning drive, the optical drive, and you just put it in a housing so it becomes an external optical drive, like people would use with a MacBook Air anyway, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Super drive, and, yeah. And then all of a sudden you've got two hard drives. You've got one you can put your operating system on and all that and all your programs, and then the other one you can have your data on and whatever you want to do. But it'll be lightning fast.
I like this plan.
You're going to need to buy the my other MacBook Pro here. So
yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah. Excellent.
Let's make a deal.
Well, I'm excited about the Hangout 10 network and all you've done. You're pretty much a pioneer in that space, you and Dan McDermott. And I'll have to take a look. I guess if you posted the first video, then it would be you that started it. So,
yeah, I'm taking credit, even though he's trying to fight that, but I'm taking credit.
But so some of the cool things that – didn't they just launch now with Hangouts on Air, the ability to have feedback while the show is going on?
Well, the questions, we're beta testing that now, and it's pretty cool. There's some things that I would like to see improved on it, but it is beta. And so – we were already using something called Comment Tracker, mm-hmm. where it would track comments from various sources, like comments made on Twitter, comments made on the YouTube channel, and you could track them, and you could put them up on the screen, and you could address the questions, you know, live in the show, and that was kind of cool. But now this questions app that is now built in, the only thing I can tell that is a kind of a downside is you have to interact with it. We're at the Google Plus posting. So in other words, you have to be watching it there on Google Plus, and if you click, it makes it like almost full screen, and then it puts the comments on the right. And what you do is, questions or whatever, you type in a question, and then people can vote up or down the question. And so the ones that are most popular rise to the top. And so the idea is they're curated somewhat by the audience. And then, of course, whoever's running the show can decide which ones to actually put up on the screen and actually address during the show.
Smart.
And so it's pretty neat. What I would like to see is it integrate with the YouTube channel, so that if people comment or type a question on the YouTube channel, that also syncs with it. And so that it doesn't matter where they're interacting with the show, on Google Plus or on YouTube. Because most of our interaction comes on YouTube, right?
Yeah, that's
true. And so if they could do that, and the other thing I want to make sure is that all of the comments end up populated on YouTube when all is said and done. And so that when the show is wrapped and somebody after the fact is watching the show and all, they get the benefit of all those questions and so forth there in the comments on YouTube.
Yeah, that would be nice for it to automatically be there rather than that feedback and that activity being lost after the show is over.
Yeah, I don't think it's lost. I think it stays on Google Plus.
Just on Google Plus. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they could tie that into each other. Maybe they'll listen to that feedback and make that change.
Yeah, they've had a lot of requests. Sarah Hill asked them about it. I mean, so that it's on their radar screen for sure.
So if someone wants to join Hangout 10, do they just reach out to you?
Yeah, the best thing to do is to circle me on Google+, go to hangout10.com, and there's information right there, and you can click through to my profile, and you can circle me, and we'll make sure that you get invited to the show. I also usually post the link on my Facebook page, because sometimes the notifications on Google+ don't work that great. Mm-hmm. So I very often will post the link to join the show Monday nights at 10 o'clock. Just remember, it's Monday nights at 10 o'clock. I'll usually post the link sometime after 9:30 p.m. on my Facebook feed to my Facebook friends. So if you friend me on Facebook, that's facebook.com/Frederick News, facebook.com/Frederick News. then you'll see the link there, and you can click on the link and come right into the show. And then we'll help you with whatever questions you have and help you get a show started.
That's great. So everyone should definitely, if you are doing Hangouts and you have a podcast going, definitely try to be a part of this network. Or if you were interested in getting started, check out hangout10.com, facebook.com/Frederick News, or just circle and circle Craig Shipp on Google+, and he'll definitely help you out. That's some good stuff there. So what's next for you? You have a lot going on already. I mean, you're probably the busiest man that I know. So,
well, actually, a lot of this stuff is on autopilot, tell you the truth. It's organized that way. I have time. But what we're really doing now, and I can't talk about all of it right now, is we are actually talking to a couple of rather large media entities about bringing the Area Guides Network to the next level. Mm-hmm. I look at everything we've done up until now as really a beta test, proving out the concept, especially proving out in Frederick that we can not only get a large number of sponsors for a local site, but that they also pay year after year for many years. Mm-hmm. And so we have a track record of showing that this will work. But in order to scale this up properly, we really need to put together a proper management team, get a professional sales manager that is used to managing, you know, outside sales force, a big outside sales force, and then marshal a real professional outside sales force to really ramp up all of the sites and do it properly. And we know how to do it. We've got the blueprint. We just need the right partner to bring this up to that next level. And I really think we can take on platforms like Facebook, for example. I think it's got a lot of issues. I think that all of these big players, even Google, has wanted to do local. And I think none of them have done local right. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a formula to do local right. So that's where we'll be headed with this. We'll be taking the next big step in the not too distant future, and you'll see much better technology. Our technology really is old. Most of our back end and everything dates from many years ago. It works, and the sponsors are happy, but we need to really bring everything to the next level as far as the UI, as far as the look of our sites. And this all requires an infrastructure and really ramping things up. But stay tuned. There's a lot of exciting things coming.
I'm excited. I cannot wait. I'm really, I know you'll keep us posted. So I am looking forward to seeing what's coming next for you. That sounds like a good, smart plan. And you're right. Local hasn't been done well. It really hasn't. They're trying to get into that space, and you do have an excellent formula that's working well. So, yeah, time to go to the next level.
There you go. Exciting times ahead.
It is. Well, good for you. Well, what, Jeff? I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
Oh, not at all.
Oh, I thought I did. I thought I heard you.
Well, Google Local is the most impersonal experience I've ever had with anything. It's amazing. So I think that'll be pretty easy to compete with if you've got boots on the ground.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they are not willing to mix it up with the regular folk. And right. I've told them the same thing with Hangouts and with Hangouts on Air and all this. I said, you all need to mix it up with people. You all need to get in there and show people that you're pleased that they're using the platform. You need to welcome people that come over from Facebook. You need to be more involved, and they're programmers. They're in their ivory tower, and they're doing their thing, and they don't really want to mix it up with the regular people. And that, to me, that has to be done. I mean, there's no shortcut. You got to get out there. You got to, go to that local business owner, hold their hand a little bit, take some photos, shoot a video, whatever you got to do, and keep them happy. And there's certain things that you just have to do. it cannot be all automated. It cannot be all just go to the website and sign up and do it. I mean, I'm sorry, too many business owners are way too busy to do that, or don't have the skill set or whatever.
I agree.
That it just isn't going to happen. You need to go out there and you need to make it happen. And we have a, like Jennifer said, we have a way to make that happen. So.
Yeah. Well said. And that's exactly right. You know, and I remember even working with, in my other, one of my roles, I used to work with a lot of small businesses and, or small business owners, let me put it that way, or chain, they own part of a chain. And that was one of the things, was promoting their business locally was very challenging to do. It's, they didn't have the skill set to go to these sites to figure out how do they manage their Google local listing. Oh, I have a Google local listing. I didn't know that. Oh, there's people rating me. I don't know this, you know,
yep.
And they're unaware. And the majority of them, they know how to manage their business. They know how to run a business, but they're not a geek, right?
You know, that's right.
And that's what it comes down to. So good. Yep. Good for you. Good for you. Thank you for doing that. And well, I guess we're approaching a little over an hour here, so I guess we should wrap things up, even though I could speak for hours with you. And I want to thank you for being on the show. And where can people, I know where to find you, and I'm going to put all your links in the show notes, but can you tell people in a nutshell where people can find you online?
Probably the easiest way is to go to my old-fashioned website, craigship.com, and then I've got a series of links there, fairly prominent links to my Twitter, to my Facebook, to my Google+. So pick your poison. You know, if you want to follow me on Twitter, friend me on Facebook, that's fine. So I've got all the links right there, and craigship.com works with craigship.com. Or craigship.com. Either way, pick your poison. But it doesn't work Greg Ship. I didn't register Greg. I should have done that.
That was smart though. That's smart. Good deal. Okay, so craigship.com.
Well, I always tell my clients, if your URL requires an explanation, then you might want to rethink your URL. So if I need to tell people every time that Ship has two P's on it, then, you know, that's probably not good. So I said, well, we solve that by just doing it both ways.
That's smart. That was clever. Out of curiosity, when did you buy your domain for your name?
Well, that's probably one of the first ones, probably back in 1996, 97.
Yeah, I think that's when I did mine. I got everyone I could get, you know, so same here.
Yep. You had to, right?
You had to, right? I know. And even for your kids, too, right? It's just important. Just
That's what I don't understand. People have kids these days, and they don't think about the URL for the kid's name.
That's crazy.
That would be the first thing I would think about in deciding on their name is, can I get the URL?
Yeah. The same. That would make a – if I were – that would definitely have a strong play in the name of my child to be – would be, you know – if the domain were taken, I might not name my child that. It's important.
I think so.
It's very
important.
And the
Twitter handle, too.
And the Twitter handle. Yeah, exactly. So, anyway.
But I think we're kind of strange, though. What do you think? What do you think, Jeff?
Jeff, what about you? Uh-oh, did his mic drop out again? He really needs to go look at your mics.
He agrees.
All right.
Hey, this is pretty good. We can get Jeff to agree to anything right now.
We can, because his mic's not working. So
yeah.
So, Jeff, can I borrow $1,000?
There you go. You got it.
Jeff, are you going to buy my new MacBook or my old MacBook?
Yeah, only $2,500.
I don't like this at all.
There he is.
Ah, yes.
So I see you're going to buy my MacBook Pro. So thank you.
hey, Jeff, if you can have Jennifer's MacBook Pro, you probably should take that. That could be valuable someday.
Oh, wow.
Make sure she signs it.
I'll autograph it for you.
Yep.
Definitely.
Well, Jeff, where can we find you online?
Anywhere near a microphone or a USB port, but at jefftickle.com and Jeff Tickle on Facebook, J Tickle on Twitter, Jeff Tickle on Google+, all those things.
Awesome. That's great. great. So I'm glad you were smart enough to grab your name for your URL as well. So
97. I wasn't as early of an adopter, but 97.
That's still early. That's
early enough.
Yeah.
That's
early enough.
That is early. Very good. Very smart. And for me, or actually for the show, getnerdywithit.com on Facebook. We're facebook.com/getnerdywithit. We are on Google Plus. Check out our website, getnerdywithit.com, to get our Google Plus link. And we're also on Twitter, getnerdy_withit. So I need to fix that. I would love to have just add getnerdywithit, but someone has it, and I'm trying to figure out how to get it from that person who's not using it. So getnerdy_withit for now. And thanks for joining us. Next week we'll have Chris Voss on, so we'll be writing about that, and we'll have the show up and online later on this evening. So thanks again, Craig. Have a super week.
And yeah, I'm a big Chris Voss fan, so I can't wait to listen to that one.
Oh, he's gonna be fun. It'll be fun to have on. So
see if we can get some inside information about the Moto X.
Oh, I'll try. I'll dig in and see if he has some. Did he attend that conference?
I don't know, but he's so hooked in. He's got to have some info.
He knows a lot. He knows a lot. Yeah. So I'll work on him. All right. Well, you have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Get Nerdy With It. Join us each week as we interview nerds talking about their passions.
Oh, nerds.
And be sure to visit us at GetNerdyWithIt.com.